And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E. W. Jackson.
And I am he. Excuse me, folks. My voice has been resting here for the last couple of days. I could not be with you all at the end of last week because I had an unexpected little dental problem. And it proved to be a little bit more complicated than I expected. And so I was out the last couple of days last week. But I am really glad to be back with you today. I really am. And I am fit and in good shape. And thank you all for your continued prayers. Because, you know, at a moment like that, when somebody's looking down your throat and doing things in your mouth, you are glad that there are prayers already buoying you. But look, folks, it's been quite a few several days, and believe me, I have wanted to be on the air with you because so many things have been happening. I think the last time we were together, which was last Wednesday, if I am not mistaken, there had not been at that point, well, maybe there had been one protest at that point. And today it looks like there are going to be 10 protests across the country against some of these gubernatorial and mayoral orders, executive orders, that have people on lockdown, and the citizens are rising up saying, we think that these orders are draconian, we think they are unconstitutional, we think they are overreached, that they go too far, and it is time to start opening things up and allowing the economy to breathe again. But some of these Democrat governors particularly are absolutely adamant and unwilling to yield, no matter how capricious and arbitrary some of the rules seem to be. So we're going to get into that a little bit, obviously. But before we do that, folks, and by the way, you know, all these issues about the Constitution, I'm sure you all are aware. We were talking about this when almost nobody else that I could find was talking about it. In fact, that was my frustration, that nobody was talking about that, that there are serious constitutional questions being raised here, and nobody seems to be raising them. And it was never a denial that this is not a crisis. It was never a denial that the disease is not real. But it's simply an acknowledgement that as a free society, we don't get to do things like Xi Jinping does in communist China and simply start ordering everybody around. It just doesn't work that way in the United States of America. We are a constitutional republic. But many of these governors and mayors have taken the position that, yes, it does work that way. And we can give people orders to do anything we want them to do. So I am glad that there are a lot of people now catching on to this and saying, you know what, wait a minute, whoa, let's re-examine this and let's re-examine your lawful authority here. And I think there's still a lot of constitutional analysis and digging that needs to be done. And I think in the aftermath, in hindsight, we're going to look back and realize a lot of these orders that were given were just flat out illegal, just flat out against the Constitution of the United States. Because the 14th Amendment says you cannot deprive Americans of life or property or liberty without due process of law. And these executive orders are not due process of law. They are one person deciding what he or she wants to do and then imposing that upon everyone else, including going so far as house arrest with penalties if you actually come out of your house, as one father with his wife and daughter in a park where arrest is. The father was arrested. So, come on, something's clearly wrong here, and we do have to get to the bottom of that. Now, and of course, we're learning a lot more about some of these numbers that we've been given. And here again, none of this is intended to suggest that this is not a real disease, that it does not have real impact on people. And I haven't heard any of the protesters even say, look, we don't think this is real. What they've been saying is, we think there's a better way to do this. We think there's a better way to approach this. And I think that's all anybody is saying who is rational and reasonable about this. But let me, this may put me a little ahead of the curve, too. I hope it does. But maybe some of you have been thinking about this. Over the weekend, I had a friend, a very dear friend, become ill as a result of an accident. And that friend ended up in the hospital. And in fact, is still in the hospital. I can't get into the details about that. But that friend is still in the hospital and is, in fact, in intensive care. This is not a coronavirus case at all. This is an accident that led to some complications. And now the person is in intensive care on a ventilator. And obviously, complications arise in these circumstances as a general matter, one of them being pneumonia and that sort of thing. So you can imagine it's a very, very difficult situation. And I know this individual is probably one of many thousands across the country right now who are, for one reason or another, aside from the coronavirus, in similar circumstances. Here is what I am deeply and profoundly bothered by. The policy of hospitals has become that if you have a loved one go into the hospital, you cannot visit them. Now, maybe there are some exceptions, and I hope that you all, as the most informed listeners anywhere in the radio world, will call me and tell me what you know and what you've experienced and what you've been told about this. But it is my understanding that hospitals all over the country have now taken the position that if you have a loved one get sick and they go into the hospital, no matter how serious the illness is, no matter what their condition is, no matter what their prognosis is, you may not see them. Now, folks, I'm not a doctor. I'm a layperson. But I do have some a modicum of common sense. And my understanding of everything I've read, everything I've been told for many, many, many years, is that the most important factor, or certainly one of the most important factors in the recovery of any patient, is the ability to have someone there, have loved ones there to encourage them, pray for them, touch them, be around them, let them know that they are not alone. And think about this, folks. Think about this. People all over this country now who get sick, go into hospitals, and their loved ones, husband, wife, father, mother, sister, brother, children, cannot go see them. Now, look, I understand that the coronavirus is a serious situation. I understand that it's contagious, and I understand that for some people who have underlying conditions, it can be lethal. But to me, it makes absolutely no sense and is a contradiction to the idea that you want people to get well, to not make accommodation to allow loved ones to go visit and be with the person that they love. I've said before, I don't know whether I said it here on the radio, but I've said it in various conversations, and maybe I have said it here. Fine, give them some hospital covering, give them a mask. Limit the number of people who can be in there, even if it's to one person at a time, or limit those people who can go in at all. I mean, so maybe it can only be the husband, or only it can only be the wife, or it can only be the children and nobody else, just to limit the number of people who are exposed. But you can't bar family members from seeing a loved one. And I tell you something, folks, I've had people say this to me. If I had a loved one who was in a hospital dying and had somebody tell me I couldn't go see them, we're going to have a problem. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I would get violent or anything like that, but I'll tell you what, I wouldn't accept that. There would be a fight. I mean, we'd have to go to court, we'd have to talk to the general manager of the hospital. Because you've got to come up with something better than that. Because as far as I'm concerned, and folks, I don't think I'm being unreasonable to say this. Here again, I'm not a doctor, I know. But everything I've read over many, many years of reading various articles about health and well-being, you may be inflating the numbers of people dying in part because they're dying because they're left there all alone and isolated without anybody to encourage them. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
Scott Gottlieb, former FDA administrator, concluded that this coronavirus would probably have been more deadly than the Spanish flu if it appeared in 1918. That's a reasonable conclusion based on what we know about this virus and what was not medically available back then. We currently have a debate about the severity and extent of COVID-19. Some skeptics believe the dangers have been exaggerated. Some of the models predicted more infections and more deaths than have occurred. Healthcare professionals lament that many Americans don't seem to take the warning seriously. These debates will go on for months. One thing we probably can all accept is that this virus would have taxed the medical capabilities of 1918. The world was at war, and medical facilities were nothing like what we have today. For example, a patient with COVID-19 today who needs intensive care still has a good chance of survival. We're seeing patients being rolled out of hospitals after facing significant respiratory issues. Gottlieb observes that anyone who gets admitted to a prolonged ICU stay with COVID-19, who ends up getting intubated or ends up getting a prolonged care, that's probably someone who would have died from the Spanish flu. He therefore concluded that COVID-19 not only looks like the Spanish flu in terms of its distribution across the age range, but also looks far more fearsome. At the very least, his observation should make you feel grateful that you not only live in the 21st century, but that you live in the U.S. It has been popular among many politicians to criticize America's healthcare system and to attack Big Pharma. Yet these observations from the former FDA commissioner is a reminder of the benefits we enjoy in this country at this time. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Antisemitism, go to viewpoints.info/antisemitism. Viewpoints.info/antisemitism.
Here's Brian Clark with today's Bible Minute.
Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. In this verse, James is saying, hey, you can talk all you want. You can have all this Bible knowledge, you can be a big shot, but at the end of the day, if you aren't caring for people who need help, your so-called religion really isn't worth much. Now, on the other hand, if your faith is real, you'll genuinely care about the people around you, especially the weak and the vulnerable, and you'll live a life that is free from that which offends God. You'll do all this because you believe what God says, you trust Him, you love Him, and you have more than enough of what you need to share. That is pure and undefiled religion.
To hear more Bible Minutes, visit backtothebible.org/Bible Minute.
Brian Fisher here. A study of the trajectory of coronavirus indicates that locking down states was pointless from the beginning. A Minnesota businessman expresses the anguish of the average American. And Gretchen Whitmer, who reminds me of Cruella de Vil, doubles down on her tyranny in Michigan. Plus, we have your daily Joe Biden word salad. That and more next on Focal Point.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
We're back. Folks, that to me is cruelty. It really is. It's cruelty. I mean, put yourself in the position of someone who's got a very, very sick loved one and being told, too bad, you can't go see them. Think about that for a second. You got a sick child. Your wife is sick. Your husband's sick. And you're told, well, sorry about that. You can't go see them. And particularly if they happen to be, if the sickness happened to be, you know, something that could be fatal, which means you might not get a chance to see them or talk to them again at all. And you're told, sorry about that. We have policies. Well, you better adjust the policy. You can't tell me that they see. Look, folks, we've got a bunch of educated fools in this country. We really do. We really do. I'm serious about that. We've got a bunch of educated fools. You can't tell me that common sense would not allow you to make some accommodation in extreme situations for people who are deathly ill to see somebody from their family. Now, come on. I'm just not buying that. And that the whole world's going to end and everybody's going to get the virus and die if you do that. I mean, come on. So if that's the policy that most hospitals are implementing, they need to change it, and they need to change it fast. But see, it's all in the spirit of this sort of totalitarian spirit that has gripped the country. You know, the Word of God says, you shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free. And I've always said that if the truth makes you free, then lies put you in bondage. If the truth liberates you, then lies incarcerate you. You buy into a lie, you walk out that lie, you live out that lie, you obey that lie, you propagate that lie, and the only thing that lie has the ability to do is to steal, to kill, and to destroy. And part of our problem here is that we have not come to grips with the fact that even in a crisis, the nature of our country does not change. Now, for example, I'm sure you all heard, this was Tucker Carlson interviewing the governor of New Jersey. The governor of New Jersey, folks. I mean, this man is in a major office. And he is asked whether he considered the Bill of Rights when he issued his executive orders mandating certain things upon the people of New Jersey, including restrictions on the ability to practice their religion. And this governor, he does not deserve the title. Because in a synagogue, they arrested 15 congregants. 15! 15! They arrested them. Because after all, 10 people, you're safe. But you go to 15, everybody dies. Okay? Ooh, whoa, you know. Oh, you know, 10 is really the magic number. We all know that 10 is an arbitrary number. We know that. It could have been 9. It could have been 12. They chose 10. We know there's no magic. We know the virus doesn't say, well, there are only 10 people here. We can't infect anybody. Right? I mean, we all know that. 15 people? It's not like there were 1,500. Of course, you couldn't arrest them anyway. 15, and you arrest them? And when he asked this governor, did you consider the Bill of Rights when you implemented these policies, and by what authority you can nullify the Bill of Rights in having such an order, Governor Murphy of New Jersey responded, "That's above my pay grade. I wasn't thinking of the Bill of Rights when we did this." I mean, folks, that's enough to make me fall out of my chair. I'm serious. It's unfathomable to me. The man took an oath to the Constitution of the United States, I'm sure, when he was sworn in as governor. And whether he was violating people's rights under the Constitution is above his pay grade. And he didn't consider the Bill of Rights when he implemented these policies? Now, there are only two conclusions that you can draw from this after you pick your jaw up off the floor, literally. Only two conclusions you can draw. One is, the man's an ignoramus. I mean, really, he's an ignoramus. How can an educated person, a person who rises to the level of being governor of a state in the United States of America, give that kind of answer? He's obviously ignorant of the Bill of Rights. I mean, he doesn't know what it requires, I guess. I guess he doesn't know, doesn't care. It's not, he said it's above his pay grade. In other words, that's not something I think about. When it's supposed to be the preeminent thing that you think about. So that whatever policies you implement, whatever legislation you propose, is all in keeping with the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of New Jersey. I mean, what? I mean, really, folks, the man is an ignoramus. And I'm not name calling. That's just a simple shorthand way of saying he's completely ignorant of things he ought to know about. Or, and this is even worse, He knows, and not only doesn't care, but is intent on undermining and trampling those rights. He knows, doesn't care, and is intent on undermining and trampling those rights. And I'll tell you something, folks. It may not be an either or. It may be a both and. In other words, he's generally familiar with the Bill of Rights, but just doesn't care. Just doesn't care. And is intent on trampling those rights because he thinks they don't really matter. You know, somebody in a post about one of my Facebook live stream posts, somebody said something to this effect. This is not quite a quote, but it's pretty close. They said, "You can't let a 200-year-old antiquated document get in the way of saving people's lives." That was exactly, I mean, that's pretty close. You can't let a 200-year-old antiquated document get in the way. First of all, the Constitution is not going to get in the way of saving anybody's life. The Constitution will help save people's lives. It will. Because if you follow it and you follow the principles of freedom that it sets forth for the governance of our country, you know what you get? You get a lot more cooperation. You know what, folks? I guarantee you this. And by the way, I'm going to start taking your calls. In fact, I'm going to try to take them this segment, but if I don't, I'll get to them coming right out of this segment. The number is 888-589-8840. I want to know how you all are assessing this. Look, the reality is, folks, that if these governors and mayors, now you all please hear me well, and if anybody listening right now knows a governor, knows a mayor, or you are a governor or a mayor and you're listening to this program, maybe you just happened up on it while you're in your car or something, listen to me closely, because this is the best advice you're going to get on this from someone who is not in government. If they had simply called people together, do it live stream, do it in a conference call, call the ministers, call the business leaders, you call people together, you figure out a way to get that done, and you say, "Look, folks, I recognize that we are a constitutional republic and that we have inherent freedoms and that I, as governor, don't have the right to be ordering people to do this, that, or the other without specific legislative authorization. And even then, if I'm infringing on your fundamental rights, it's got to be with a compelling governmental interest. It's got to be the least possible, in the least drastic means, the best and most narrowly tailored way possible. And I respect that. And I want you all to know that I respect that. So I don't want to close down churches. I don't want to order you all what you can and cannot do, because I don't think it's constitutional to do that or right anyway. But here's what we're facing, and here's what we're asking you to do. This is not an order. It's a request." Folks, I guarantee you, if they had done that, you wouldn't be getting protests right now. And I believe you'd get 99% of the American people cooperating and happy about it. But oh no, that's not what they do. "If I find out that any church is meeting after you've been told not to, we're going to close you down permanently. If I find out you're having meetings in your parking lot, we're going to take down the license numbers and we will later fine you. If we stop you and you're not out for a right reason, you're going to be cited and you better prove where you're going and why you have a right to be there." And putting police officers, these noble, courageous men and women who go out there and defend us against criminals every single day, putting them in the position of acting like a police state toward their fellow citizens because some stupid governor or mayor doesn't have the sense God gave a gnat. Now, I know that's pretty stark and that's pretty direct, but I think it just needs to be said that way. So folks, I want to know what you all have been experiencing out there. The number is 888-589-8840. We'll take your calls when we get back.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
One of the shortcomings of so many people today is the willingness to work and wait. We are in a big hurry. The boy can't wait to become a youth, and the youth can't wait to become a man. It is an extremely helpful attitude, this willingness to work and wait. Haste trips up its own heels, fetters and stops itself, said Seneca. Shortcuts and abridged methods are the demand of the hour. But the way to shorten the road to success is to take plenty of time to lay a good foundation. Hard work, a definite aim, and faithfulness will shorten the way. Don't risk a life's superstructure upon a day's foundation. When an author told Wordsworth she'd spent 6 hours on a poem, he replied that he would have spent 6 weeks. Thomas Carlyle wrote with utmost difficulty and never penned a page of his great histories without consulting every known authority. Every sentence was the sum total of several books, the result of many hours of drudging research in the great libraries. Michelangelo spent 4 years painting the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, the Pope's private chapel in Rome. But visitors by the million today still marvel at his feat. Daniel Webster was once urged to speak on a subject of great importance. He refused, saying that he was busy and had no time to master the subject. But, replied his friend, a very few words from you would do much to awaken public attention to it. Webster replied, if there be so much weight in my words, it is because I do not allow myself to speak on any subject until my mind is imbued with it. On one occasion, Webster made a very remarkable speech before the Phi Beta Kappa Society at Harvard. He was presented with a book at the meeting. After he had gone, his impromptu speech, carefully written out, was found in the book, which he had forgotten to take away. Alexander Hamilton, the soldier and statesman who served in George Washington's cabinet, once said, "Men give me credit for genius. All the genius I have lies just in this. When I have a subject in hand, I study it profoundly. Day and night it is before me. I explore it in all its bearings. My mind becomes pervaded with it. Then the effort which I make, the people are pleased to call the fruit of genius. It is the fruit of labor and thought." One minister, famous minister in New York, had this to say, "I've been watching the careers of young men by the thousand in this busy city of New York for over 30 years. And I find that the chief difference between the successful and the failures lies in the single element of staying power. Permanent success is more often won by holding on than by the sudden dash, however brilliant. The easily discouraged, who are pushed back by a straw, are all the time dropping to the rear, to perish or to be carried along on the stretcher of charity. Those who understand and practice Abraham Lincoln's homely advice of pegging away have achieved the greatest success." Well, it's a most beneficial trait, this willingness to work and wait. Most of us would be helped by practicing it.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. And folks, one other quick point, and then I want to come to your calls. We are learning, and I've been saying this for a while too. I've talked to doctors myself who have admitted it to me, that any death during this period, any death for almost any purpose that occurs in a hospital or medical setting is attributed to coronavirus. Particularly, of course, if the person happens to have the virus at the time that they die, even if it's not the virus that is the cause of the death. Now, I've had anecdotal incidents where doctors have confirmed that for me and told me that that is the consensus of the medical community. And I'm sure you all are probably aware that an organization now is reporting that indeed doctors are in hospitals are being paid more if they declare the death a coronavirus death. And folks, here again, that is not to say that people aren't dying from this thing. We know that. That is not to say that. It is not to pretend that nothing is happening. But we need accurate information. We need accurate numbers. And we don't need to be manipulated. We don't need to be led like sheep to the slaughter by people who are telling us things not because they're true, but because they get the desired effect. So if it's a coronavirus death, it's a coronavirus death. But if it's a death on some other cause, why in the world are they attributing it to it? Well, according to this organization, Global Research, they're saying that Medicare is determining that if you have COVID-19 and you die of COVID-19, the reimbursement levels for treatment are higher. That in other words, it drives up the value if the person if they're whatever's going wrong with them, if it's attributed to COVID-19. I have a friend right now, folks. I have a friend right now who happens to be in a hospital on a ventilator. It is not related to COVID-19. What they're telling us, though, is if you say it is, the reimbursement is higher. Something's wrong with that. Okay? Something's wrong with that. All right, let's go to your calls, and I'm just interested in hearing what you all are experiencing out there and what you think. So let's go to David in Louisiana. David, welcome.
Hello, Bishop Jackson. How you doing?
I'm blessed, David. How are you?
Thank you. It's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you, sir.
What you just brought up about visitation at hospitals, I'm directly related in that where I do security at one of our state-run hospitals, and the policy that you stated of no visitors is extremely enforced at this time. I can't say for all the hospitals, but
yeah.
That's what will follow. So I can understand your feelings, and I have some reservations on that, but I'll just hold them. But if I could, I'd like to get to my question.
Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. Where has the UN been during this so-called epidemic and now pandemic? I don't hear anything from the news from them. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I always thought that this was their time to step up. And besides, I know they got the General Assembly, but I think they have a sub-organization which is directly related to welfare and well-being. Now, if they're derelict, I mean, if they, are even worse, we need to bring this to light, you know.
Yeah.
And, I know our previous president administration, they relied heavily on the UN. Well, this one, not present president, not so much. He seems to consult them, you know. But anyway, thank you.
Okay.
That's my question. And
thank you, David.
I'll wait for your comment.
Thank you, David, for both. Thank you for confirming that that is the strictly enforced policy at hospitals. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you reserving your own feelings about that as someone who works security in a hospital. And here again, folks, I am not suggesting, just open the floodgates. Let anybody come in who wants to come in. All I'm saying is surely there can be an accommodation when someone has a loved one, particularly someone whose life is in danger, since we know that healing is accelerated and aided by the presence of loved ones, by their prayers, by their expressions of love, by their encouragement. And I'm not saying have no restrictions or no regulations. I just think that this blanket, no, nobody's visiting. It's just, to me, it's draconian, it's monstrous, it's unjustified. So But we appreciate you sharing that with us, David. On the UN is, in my view, folks, a dead letter. I mean, we haven't heard anything about the UN because we've been focused on the World Health Organization. And frankly, at this point, I'm glad the UN is not involved in this because I think anything they touch turns to mush. They're a corrupt, useless organization, in my view. And we're seeing even the World Health Organization, how China's gotten in there and corrupted that and taken it over. So I'm not sure, David, that we should be expecting anything from the UN on anything that is meaningful or of concern to any of us, not only in the United States of America, but anywhere in the world. Okay, let's go to Jeff in Maryland. Jeff, welcome.
Yes.
You're on, hello? Jeff.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. I have a problem with these governors, unconstitutional governors, and the unconstitutional orders. And if my dad was dying in a hospital and they told me I couldn't see him, I just didn't have a problem. I'm on the radio, boss. Yeah, they have a problem. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but if you have a radio on, Jeff, you have to turn it down.
No, I have no radio on, sir. But yeah, okay. I just think these unconstitutional things, and people need to stand up for the rights. You know, you're not going to keep me from seeing my dad if my dad is dying in the hospital.
Jeff, I hear you. Jeff, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And here again, folks, it should go without saying, but because we know that people listen to this program who have no intention whatsoever of properly interpreting anything we say, and I can tell you, I read all the time about things that I've said and what they're supposed to mean when they mean nothing like that. I know Jeff and I, we're not talking about getting violent with people, but we're simply talking about standing up for our rights and demanding a change in policy that is in keeping with and consistent with our humanity and our freedom as Americans. And so thanks for the call, Jeff. Let's go to James in Mississippi. James, welcome.
How are you doing, sir?
Great, James. How are you?
Great. I got I'm real surprised and kind of scared of the way that people are going along with all this stuff. People better wake up because, like you said, this a lot of things going on and people are just going right along with it. And as far as not being able to see your family when they're in the hospital because of this, they can probably keep you out of that hospital if they want to. But if I get sick and I don't think I'm going to make it, I'm going to come out of there and see my family.
Yeah.
And that's all I got to say, brother.
All right. All right, James. I think most people would see it that way. And here again, you can't tell me that there's no way to make an accommodation. And that's part of the problem with some of these little would-be dictators have been responding is one-size-fits-all blanket orders in which everybody is controlled. You all remember Dr. Fauci saying, I don't understand why every state is not locked down. I don't understand why every state doesn't give orders. And I think it was the governor of, South Dakota saying, well, everybody here is already social distancing because we've only got whatever the number of people is in the state. And we all live approximately 10 miles apart. So we don't need the same thing applying to us that might apply to a New York. But you get the experts say, no, everybody should be locked down all across the board. Well, no, they don't need to be. And we can make appropriate adjustments as needed. We can have flexibility as needed. So, yeah, look, folks, I couldn't agree more. There would be a fight. And here again, I mean, when I say fight, I mean the good fight of faith. I wouldn't just roll over and, I can't see my child, I can't see my daughter, I can't see my wife, I can't, okay. Well, yeah, all right, that's, I understand. No, that would not be my response. The battle would be on. And the thing is, it would be good for everybody. We'll be back in a moment.
That's 1-888-388-2683. Or visit billygraham.org.
American Family Radio newscasts are now available as a podcast.
I'm Rusty Pugh.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
Didn't catch the full story? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Chris Woodward.
I'm Chad Groening.
Didn't have the radio on at the top of the hour? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Charlie Bunch.
And I'm Fred Jackson.
Get accurate news from a Christian perspective whenever you want it with the American Family News podcast. You can also sign up for our daily news brief. Visit onenewsnow.com.
My name is Carol, and I'm in Ohio. And I just wanted to say that there is one program I really, really like, and it's called Unshackled. There is some times that I do break down and cry when I hear some of those stories because they are so true. And I also enjoy all the Christian worship and everything that we do on the station. Sometimes when I feel like I'm tired and I can't do anything around the house, I turn the station on, start listening, and I pick up energy. And another thing, too, is I'm learning a lot more about Christ. I do go to my Bible studies and everything, but I'm learning a lot more about Christ by listening to the station. And I just hope that it continues forever.
Join us for our three-day Spring Share-a-thon, May 19th, 20th, and 21st. And thank you for standing with American Family Radio.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. Folks, the number is 888-589-8840. Lots of calls, but we'll try to get every single one of you in. Still time if you want to call in. But let's go back to the lines. Let's go to Shirley in Tennessee. Shirley in Tennessee. Welcome, Shirley.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, the love of money is the root of all evil, from the institution of slavery to all the other wicked institutions that have happened. You can find money at its core, just like naming coronavirus for stuff that people die from that's not coronavirus. But in any case, I wanted to share this. If officers have something, and my relative was an officer, so I know, that's called officer discretion. So even if they were asked to go out there and take tickets, they don't necessarily have to do it. And God wouldn't have us to do things where we harass people when we are police officers and pick on folks when it goes against our God. So just tell them it's against my God to harass people. And it's time for us to vote out these people. You know, the sheriffs are sending them. So then these sheriffs are a problem, too. And it reminds me of Hitler's day, when you remember that the Brown officers and the Brown Army were harassing people left and right. And so after Hitler died, there were tribunals. And in the tribunal courts, these people came out and said, well, we were only doing our job. We were doing what we were told to do. And that's where the problem comes in, when people will obey illegal stuff because they were told to do it on the job. I feel also, one last thing, if the governors feel that they are being blamed for Trump, feel like they're being blamed and for things being shut down, they're trying to blame Trump, which we know is false because China started this, then what they need to do is tell every company in their city, in their state, come down here, sign a paper that you're going to reopen back up, and anybody who gets sick, once you open up, is going to be on you. And let all these people come down there, and we'll shut down all this marching and all these protesting, even though I agree with the people. We do need to open up, especially a lot of facets of our economy. I don't see why a man mowing a lawn would cause us to have to shut all the government down. Let them open their lawn services back up, and we will see what happens. Even if the numbers grew a little bit, we don't need to shut down our whole economy for this. It's just time to start voting these people out. Thank you.
All right. Shirley, that was powerful. Now, I appreciate that. And by the way, folks, we're not here again because, and I say this not for you all who are listening, but really for the people who sometimes monitor the program for the purpose of trying to make us all look like we're crazy. But so for them, because I really want to win them to Jesus Christ and win them to our faith. And and you know, just let them know that, that they're loved. When Shirley brings up the brown shirt, she's not saying that police officers are acting like brown shirts. What she's saying is that it's easy to get into a situation, and this is what's happened for us, and she's just using that as an analogy, not likening any governor to Hitler or anything like that. But it's easy in a crisis situation, and that's the situation that Germany was in. It's not the first time it's happened. The same thing was true in Russia. For people to begin to think that because of the nature of this crisis, we simply have to all lock arms and obey with what the authorities tell us. And I think that's the point she's getting at. That's just a very dangerous place to be in any society, at any time, in any circumstance. And we in the United States of America, as a people who are supposed to be educated, and when I say educated, I don't mean, you know, everybody's got to have a PhD, but I mean we're supposed to be knowledgeable. We're supposed to know our Constitution, understand the nature of our government, understand the nature of our system of governance. And so we're supposed to be in a position to question and say, well, now, wait a minute. Well, that's not in keeping with the Constitution. That's not in keeping with our laws. And our police officers, I think Shirley's right. Our police officers have to have that same presence of mind because, after all, they do take an oath to the Constitution, not to a mayor and not to a governor, but to the Constitution of the United States as well. And by the way, folks, let me just mention one of the things that we're going to be doing here coming up shortly. We've already got it in the works, and I'm excited about it, too. We've got a couple things, actually. One is called A Citizen's Pledge to Stand for America. In fact, I'll share that with you all sometime. I won't get to do it today. And the other is A Citizen's Pledge to the Constitution of the United States. Because, you know, those of us who are born here, we don't ever take an oath to the Constitution unless we join the military. But anybody who wants to become a naturalized citizen has got to take an oath to the Constitution. You know, and I'm not asking government to do that. I don't want that. But we've come up with something that we think is going to really excite people, which is an opportunity for all of us to take an oath to the Constitution of the United States as voluntarily as citizens, not under some government order, but voluntarily as citizens. You all stand by to hear more about that. By the way, while I've got this moment, let me mention May 1st. Friday, May 1st at 12 noon Eastern time, I'm hosting something called the Stand Against Communism live stream event. The Stand Against Socialism Communism live stream event, Friday, May the 1st from 12 to 2 Eastern time. My guest speakers for that event will be Dr. Jerome Corsi, Reverend Rafael Cruz, Claire Lopez, Trevor Loudon, and former Lieutenant Colonel and Congressman Alan West. Going to be an exciting thing. I'll tell you all more about them and more about the event later, but mark it on your calendar, please. Friday, May 1st, 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time. It's going to be a live-streamed event. If you want to find out more about it, go to my website, standamerica.us, standamerica.us. Let's go back to your calls. Thank you all for your patience. Let's go to Brenda in Ohio. Brenda, welcome.
Yes, hello. I thank you so much, Brother Bishop, for all that you do. Thank you for taking my call. It's my first time to ever call the station. I just want to tell you four quick things. For one, I'm a new citizen of Ohio from 16 months ago and look so forward to our elections, and I was utterly aghast and shocked that Governor DeWine, on just some false numbers and high frenzy from this health director Acton, that it stole our elections. Everybody mm-hmm. here feels like our election was just stolen. Mm-hmm. So that's a very big frustration. But I've also been a patient. I've had 6 surgeries in the last 5 weeks. Wow. I had been a full-time caregiver for my fully disabled son, who's totally dependent upon me as his communicator. And the very day they started the lockdown, I had no idea that was going on. I was with him, and I was vehemently charged by the medical people for being there and ostracized, and I had to seek counsel, and I still do, because they upset me. I had just gotten word I had cancer, and I didn't know how long I had to live, and they would not allow me to go back and see my son. And so I'm in the process of signing documents as a protest, because my son is dependent upon me, and we've been isolated for 6 weeks.
Wow.
Then I was in the hospital with my surgeries, long story short. It was the strangest thing. Every week, protocols were changed hour by hour. My last cancer surgery was delayed almost 3 hours. I was there an hour and a half early, and I was left alone. If anything happened to me, nobody would know. No one wanted to be in there together as a team, either in surgery or in the pre-surgery preparations. I was left alone. It was the weirdest thing.
Brenda, thank you so much for the call. And we're going to be praying for you, Brenda, and people in your position all over this country right now who are facing similar kinds of circumstances. It just goes to show that on the state and local level, a lot of these little bureaucratic dictators have just gone off the board. So, Brenda, God bless you, and thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to Mississippi. Deandra in Mississippi. Deandra, welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My husband Saturday evening had a heart attack, so I had to take him down to our local hospital in South Mississippi, and I had to let him off at the door, and I was told to go wait in the parking lot, and I waited for 4.5 hours, and finally my husband was able to get a text out to me and his sister and my son, but no one from that hospital ever dared to call us, tried to come out to talk with us, anything. And I was just, and today he had to have a heart cath where they put stents in. And finally, a doctor called me a little while ago to let me know that he is okay.
Wow. See, yeah, Deandra, and again, we'll be praying for your husband and your family too. And we really appreciate you letting us know that. This is the kind of stuff, folks, that's just got to stop. It's just got to stop. It's ridiculous. So, Deandra, thank you. Let's see. I think we can get a couple more in here. Let's go to John in Texas. John, you've been very patient. Welcome. John, you're on.
Hey, Bishop. I just want to go and admonish the thinking according to what it says in Scripture. It says, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, with humility of mind regarding one another is more important than yourself, not merely looking out for your own personal interest. The problem that we're having in our ICUs is just that the hospitals do not have the masks to give out to us and the people working in ICUs to go and protect ourselves. If the personal protective equipment was there, they would not have to have those restrictions. And that is the problem. I mean, you're supposed to change masks. You know, the CDC is having you change masks between patients. Now you get two masks for a week. The people on the intensive care units just don't even have protection against all the time against their patients, less bringing people in from the outside.
Now, John, that's interesting because we've been advised that everybody ought to wear masks. So, you know, how can you advise everybody to wear masks if there's such a shortage of masks that people don't have enough masks to go visit a loved one in a hospital, particularly in that situation? And, you know, here again, I'm not suggesting that what you just said is not a problem. What I am saying is I don't think it's an unsolvable problem. I think it's a problem that can be solved, and I think like a lot of things that we're hearing about this, John, a lot of this stuff that we're hearing is, it's as if we are told it to make us accept it rather than told it because that's simply the way it is and there's nothing anybody can do about it. So here again, I'm concerned about the inflation of the death rate because people aren't able to be with their loved ones, which is one of the most curative things that can happen for them. So, but I appreciate your point. I appreciate your point, John. I think that's something that can be overcome. Well, look, folks, God bless you all. We're praying for you all. We're going to keep fighting through this thing, and we're going to get through it with flying colors. And in the meantime, remember, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.